Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two.
Gilmore.
Oh, big stop.
Oh,
brother.
Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann and joining me today is Chris Barnwell. He is a Harvard Paroxysm contributor and he's also editor for At the Hive, Charlotte Hornets blog. Chris, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
And we are going to talk about the top 50 greatest player case for Dwight Howard. He is 68th all time in win shares, 42nd in win shares for 48, 71st in box score plus minus, 70th in value over replacement player. He has been named to five All-NBA first teams, one second team, two third teams. He is a three-time defensive player of the year, four times an All-Defensive first team, one time on the second team. He has three top 10 seasons of win shares for 48 and three top 10 seasons of value over replacement player. He is fifth all-time in effective field goal percentage. He is fourth in total rebound percentage, although I believe that only goes back to the 70s or so. So it doesn't compare to some of the – doesn't include some of the historic players. On other top player rankings, he is 78th in the Bill Simmons pyramid ranking out of 96 players. And in the Slam 500, he is 86. These rankings were done in 2010, 2011. So they don't really account for the, last few seasons, which for most players doesn't really matter, but for Dwight, it actually might. So Chris, what do you think about the top 50 case for Dwight Howard?
It's definitely a difficult one to make because, especially with the last few years and the back injury, and because of his reputation just as a kind of an unlikable guy, it's really hard to get behind it because it's really easy to make a case for Shaq being like a top 50 player, besides the fact that he was as dominant as he was, because everyone liked Shaq as a player. Well, Dwight Howard is no one really likes him very much. So
yeah, well, to be fair, Kobe didn't really like Shaq very much, but
Kobe was like the only one, I think. Dwight Howard might have not liked Shaq.
Yeah, Dwight didn't care much for Shaq. But I certainly get your point. I think there are some strengths in his case. He is one of the best defenders of his era, and he also had the challenge. There are going to be people who say, well, you know, he didn't necessarily like play in an era with a lot of great big men, but he has to defend more versatile big men, and he has to, you know, go around the court and defend smaller players and is expected to play in a more sophisticated era where he has to cover more ground in defense.
He's kind of in a weird era where he was a transition big man in a situation where we were going away from the whole Kendrick Perkins style of just be really big and really strong and get in their way to you need to be mobile, fast, and be able to cover a lot of ground quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he terrific pick and roll scorer. He also was the, you know, important player, the most important player for a team that made the finals. You know, he certainly has had success, not won championships, but has had playoff success. And
you can make the argument he should have been an MVP one year.
Right. Yeah. He finished third, I believe, that year. And yeah, he absolutely had a very strong case to be MVP. You know, I do think that there certainly is a case. It is if he had been that same Orlando player the last three or four years, it would be a stronger case. But he was very good for quite a long time, and you know, his career is obviously not over. He's only 29. I mean, he could possibly come back and still be, you know, have another, you know, few good years in him to add to his case. He's definitely you know, obviously being a player who's still current, and you know, he's one of the few players who we're considering who really can do a lot more for their legacy. But even at this point, I do think he's definitely worth considering.
Definitely. I mean, with him, you really have to look at the pre-back injury, or basically, I guess, pre-2011-2012 season to really kind of get a good gauge on his career. Like, you have to look at the Orlando years, and then when you get to the back injury, you have to look at him again and say, well, how much do we consider the previous years when he was as good, and how much do we take away because of the back injury and toxic situation with the Lakers, and then moving with a new team in Houston? How much of that do you have to take into consideration and take away from his good years?
Yeah, and even, you know, even the last few years, I mean, they've been bad by a certain standard, but his team,
they've been bad by his standard, which, right, if you go to like a normal standard, he's been perfectly fine.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, there are other players who have, you know, who have ridden, and other big men, frankly, who have ridden, you know, in elite 6-7 years and then merely been good for a long time. I mean, honestly, Moses Malone has, you know, really had 6 or 7 really, really strong seasons and then was, you know, pretty good to average for most of the rest of his career. And, you know, I mean, if Dwight accomplishes that, that makes it interesting, you know. Looking sort of at some of the deeper stats for him, if you kind of compare to his era position, so big men of his era, he is 7th in points per 36, 4th in rebounds per 36, 30th in blocks per 36, 1st in value over replacement player, 1st in defensive win shares, 2nd in win shares per 48. If you look at how he rates among his position all time, 35th in points per 36, 26th in rebounds per 36, 81st in block per 36, which is lower than I would have expected for Dwight in blocks, 15th in value of replacement player, 13th in defensive win shares, 11th in win shares per 48. So, you know, certainly strong numbers, but I do think the thing for him that's going to be tough is, he's obviously been a very effective player, but he is, you know, he's at the position where it's not merely enough to be really good for a number of, for a few seasons, to be elite for a few seasons. I mean, we're talking about guys like Russell, like Kareem, like Duncan, like Wilt, who, you know, dominated the league for a long time and
just forever.
Yeah. And have tremendous longevity too. You know, we're dominant for more than a decade and lasted the league, you know, Kareem's case for 20 years. So,
and even look at like everyone's favorite comparison with him, which really, in my opinion, is a terrible one, is him and Shaq. And Shaq was good for probably a good decade and a half, while Dwight's reign is more of a 5-year, really great play level of play.
Yeah. I mean, there's that, you know, I kind of think about where to sort of put him among the tiers of big men. I mean, is he like, you know, is he in that second tier where, you know, where I would put somebody like, you know, David Robinson, Hakeem, Moses, Bob Pettit, Artis Gilmore, or is he in the third tier with, you know, someone like, you know, Ewing or Unseld or Willis Reed or Robert Parrish? Nate Thurmond, like I maybe sort of in between those guys. It's hard to kind of see where exactly he fits in. I guess it really depends on how much you value what he was able to do defensively. I mean, you know, one thing about defensively is, you know, those Orlando teams, he was not necessarily surrounded by the best defensive players.
Jameer Nelson, Courtney Lee, oh my goodness, who was the shooting guard? Someone named shooting guard that I can't remember at this moment. Rashard Lewis.
Yeah.
Turkaloo.
Yeah.
Yeah, Turkaloo. That was his 2009 team he took to the playoffs behind defensive 3-point shooting. Like,
yeah. And Courtney Lee's probably the only. That's insane. Courtney Lee's probably the only plus defender out of those guys, you know.
And he was a rookie, which means he didn't even know defense that well.
Sure.
Like, his defense is shockingly. It's really dumb to say this, but it's. I feel like it's kind of true. It's almost underrated. An underrated part of his career, because just. I don't think we had seen anyone that dominant during his time period as a player. Like the three straight Defensive Player of the Year awards. When was the last time that had happened before him? It was like Dikembe Mutombo or someone like that, right?
Yeah, Ben Wallace. I don't know if he had three in a row, but he won four. But they were obviously split, you know, among years, and Dikembe as well. But you know, those guys weren't asked to carry the burden on offense that Dwight was.
I mean, no, at all. And everyone's going to immediately go, well, he has no post game, or he really can't score, which is a ridiculous assertion, by the way, because first, if we're going to go into the post game thing, you have to look at his career before Stan Van Gundy got there. When the big criticism against him was that he wasn't good enough on defense. He was this overpowering, gigantic big man down low that could score. He didn't score in a pretty way, by the way, but he scored. And he couldn't really do great on defense. Dan Van Gundy comes along, turns him into this elite defender, and still the same level of scorer. But everyone's all mad because he's not Shaq's overpoweringness or Hakeem's beautiful post moves. Like, he looks very on offense, but it worked. I want to say in 2010, which is arguably the Magic's best team they ever had under him, when he had let me look it up. It's got it right here. True shooting percentage. Sorry. He had a 63% true shooting percentage. 61% true shooting percentage with 22 points per game. Like, that kind of efficiency just doesn't happen, even for big men. That is not something people are able to do. And it's really frustrating because everyone's like, well, his post game still isn't that good and he still can't score, like where you can't give him the ball and score. Yeah, you could. He doesn't score in the traditional way of backyard man down for 4, 5, 10 seconds. Like, the only guys who do that anymore is Al Jefferson. He was really good at coming off the screen, grabbing the ball, 1, 2 quick moves, get it up. That was his bread and butter in Orlando as far as the post goes. And he was so good at that, and it's just crazy to say he's underrated in any way, but he was.
Yeah, and I mean, and he's, you know, he's not doing that just on a few shots a game. I mean, he's taking, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 shots a game, averaging that, you know, during that time in Orlando. So he's, yeah, I mean, he's a focal part of the offense. He's not just, I agree that it is not necessarily, he never really developed a refined offensive game for the most part. I mean, you know, he does have some post moves. I mean, he can do some things. He had some touch and something. It wasn't pretty, but it was certainly effective. You know, he could score. You could, you know, get in the ball and, you know, I mean, yeah, okay, you're not going to necessarily turn into Dwight Howard for the final shot, but, you know, how many big men in the league are historically have really been, like, the final shot of the game type guys? I mean, that
outside of the 90s when they had a defense that allowed you to do that, I mean, never.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to Jordan, you're going to your guard a lot to create that final shot because bigs don't create their own shots that much. I mean, they rely on passes from the they rely on passes from the guards. You know, obviously, you know, you can they could create in certain ways, but you know, it's still the last shot has traditionally been brought in by a guard or a forward. It's not usually the domain of a big man.
Yeah, completely agree. And like, that's for whatever reason that gets used as a criticism against him. And again, I feel like this goes back to the fact that he's not a very likable person.
Yeah.
And it's really silly because big men need the ball. Big men just don't dribble. They need the ball. He wasn't Hakeem. There are very few players that are Hakeem. Hakeem's one of the greatest to ever play this game.
Sure. And even like, he, I would say, is a second tier on the second tier of, you know, NBA big men for me, which is just incredible because of just how many great ones there are, you know.
Agreed.
So, my thought is that Dwight, you know, I mean, there's a case there, but I do think that he's going to run to a numbers game where there's just too many great big men who had long careers of dominance who, you know, were part of some of the greatest teams ever, and he's just not going to quite measure up to that standard unless he is able to have a second act in his career that's, you know, incredible. In the last couple seasons, last three seasons, he's, you know, slowed down, dealt with injuries, been effective in spurts, looked like the old Dwight in spurts, but clearly seems like, you know, that outcome doesn't seem super likely.
If he's ever going to get into that top 50 conversation, you're going to have to put him in that category of, well, look at the impact he had on the game. And you really can make that the argument that him and Tom Thibodeau are the guys that created the modern NBA defense right now of get your big man down low, get your big man that can defend the rim, use him as your last line of defense and your first line of defense, and then get everyone back, have that guy stay and grab rebounds. Just they kind of helped with that modern defense. And you can look at it, what he did on offense and changed like offense. Him and Stan Van Gundy basically changed offense for big men. Like pick and roll is now the best way to use your big man in the offense in today's NBA. And everyone seeing Dwight Howard do that, like his impact, he might go down as maybe a third tier big man and not one of the greatest to ever play the game. Like when you list him against guys like Wilt and Bill and Hakeem, but that's okay because he probably impacted it more than a lot of those guys did. Okay, maybe not more than the three I just mentioned, but a lot of guys right. That played.
I get what you're saying. Yes. Yeah. That totally makes sense to me. Anything else you'd like to say about Dwight?
He gave me some of my favorite basketball memories as an Orlando Magic fan, and some of my worst.
Any in particular that are your best?
The best has to be the game-winning dunk against the Spurs on the alley-oop play.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. That was great.
Had never seen that before.
Yeah.
Ever. And then, of course, the finals run in 2009. I still remember just being giddy over that.
Yeah. Yeah. I it's weird because, you know, at one point he was actually pretty well-liked. I mean, for his first 6 years or so, you know, before he started really making it well known that he, you know, wasn't interested in staying in Orlando, like people didn't really have a problem with him. I mean, I guess he was always a goofball and he was always, you know, a little bit of a weirdo, but that didn't really feed into like his public persona that much. He was just kind of like a happy-go-lucky guy and it was like, yeah, you know, he seems fine.
Yeah, and then everyone kind of bought into it a little too much with like he can appreciate a good fart joke if he wants, but I mean, just no one needs to hear about it every single time, man.
Yeah. you gotta know when to hold him. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's appropriate there, but anyway, Chris, thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your thoughts and memories of Dwight Howard. Very much appreciate it. Is there anything you want to mention to our listeners about where they can find you or what you're up to?
They can find me mainly on Twitter with my Twitter feed at Chris Barnwall, at CHRISBARNEWALL. That's where you can mainly find me. And you can also find me on At The Hive and Hardwood Paroxysm, where I'm usually writing a lot. I have a post on At The Hive right now, actually, about Del Curry being the Hornets' first ever pick for the team and the expansion draft, and kind of how they coexist in the wave in their past. Like Del Curry and the Hornets kind of exist at the same time. It's really interesting. And then, of course, on Hardwood Paroxysm, I have a post right now about my sophomore crush, Aaron Gordon.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for checking us out. And we'll keep doing shows looking at modern players and whether they are top 50 candidates. We appreciate any feedback on those or any other shows that we do. You can find us on Twitter at Over and Back NBA. We're also on Facebook at Over and Back NBA. And you can also, we have a new web forum that you could find at overandbacknba.com. And of course, you can find our podcast at hardwoodparoxysm.com. So thanks everyone for listening, and until next time.